Welcome to Everyday Witch, the podcast. Join head witches Tess and Nikki as we discuss our lives and invite you to embrace the magic. Hi guys, and welcome to today's episode. We have Dory from Witchcrafted and Henchtooth Cottage with us here today, and we're so happy to have you on the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's so nice to be here with you.
Yes, we're so excited to learn more about both your businesses. I think most people know you from Witchcrafted, but you do a lot of different stuff.
Would you like to elaborate and tell a little bit more about what you do?
Well, I'm a crafter. I love to collect vintage linens, and I've had my business, Henchtooth Cottage, which was formerly Lois and Leroy, where I repurpose vintage linens into accessories and bags and altar cloths. And that kind of led me to creating Witchcrafted, which is this big, beautiful bitch who keeps me really busy. And that is, right now, my primary focus is on Witchcrafted, because she just doesn't leave a lot of room for anything else.
What inspired you to create Witchcrafted?
I was a vendor vending at markets, and when I first started, what I was bringing to markets was repurposed vintage linens, so very cottagecore, really with mass appeal. But I felt really called to start incorporating imagery and different tools for my practice. And when I would incorporate things that had imagery, like a pentagram or moons, people would have either a really great reaction and really connect with it, or I would get feedback that, well, this isn't supposed to be outside of a metaphysical shop. Like, this isn't appropriate for the market. So I just felt that I didn't really fit in to the vendor markets. And it's hard to find a good vendor market. There's kind of a monopoly. The markets that are really well attended, they're hard to get into, and they're really vanilla. It was like all these beige people making beige things with cactuses.
Yes.
Yeah.
The cactuses. And it's like always the graphic art cactuses that you could find in Home Goods. And I'm not knocking anyone who, like, that's your art, but I would see it at every single market. It was, like, the same exact thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was, like, this dominating force or aesthetic for handmakers to be really similar. And I just was frustrated. Of course, because it really, it's frustrating when you apply for a market and you don't get in.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to create a market that my work fit into, kind of a little jewel box for my altar cloths and for my products, for people that did practice contemporary witchcraft. And so that was a motivator behind doing a market like Witchcrafted. And I also have to say that I was really inspired by seeing markets in other states, like seeing markets on the East Coast, seeing night markets and seeing other witch markets, and just like drooling while scrolling through the pictures.
Yeah.
Like, I want to shop there. I want to go to there.
That's amazing.
I think that's something like a lot of people can relate to.
Yeah. I do get a little jealous sometimes of the stuff that's happening on the East Coast. I'm like, that's not fair. I want to do that. But it's nice though to see more things becoming available in the West Coast. Well, because, back in the 90s, before there was internet and all these things that allowed you to be access to like global knowledge, like that's the way it was. The East Coast got all the cool hip fashion, and then the West Coast caught up like about had the second half of the year, and then everybody was all cool and the season would change. And it was neat to see those progressions, back when that was a thing. I mean, I think you still see it, but not as much nowadays. But did you ever expect Witchcrafted to be as well received as it is?
No. No, I had no idea. Like, in my mind, I do a journal for each market, and so it was just this idea in my head. And my first journal, I had just written words like the moon and celestial and candles. It was very, it was just this idea, and I thought it would be 20 women sitting around and buying stuff from each other and talking about the moon and just this really chill, tiny little niche thing.
Yeah.
Showed me that we're a really underserved community in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many people that identify with alternate types of belief systems, that identify with the witch archetype and with the practice of modern witchcraft, paganism, and there's just a lot of us, way more than we ever thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that market definitely showed it, you know, like, I never expected there to be that many people when I did that market, and I was totally blown away. Well, I think all the vendors were, though, for that one. It was, like, it was crazy.
I'm still blown away every time I do a show. I mean, the first night we met, she was like, have you heard of witchcraft? And I was like, no, and I think I was like, oh my gosh, I was only like six months into vending at that point, because my company just turned one in January of this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And I was like, no, but I want to be in that. That sounds amazing. And she's like, it's so great. And I was like, couldn't wait. But every time I go, I'm always blown away by the crowds, and they're just so friendly, and so, like, they're just sponges, and they just want to talk to each and every person. And me too. Like, I always get there early, so I make sure I have an hour to go around and talk to people. And like, oh my God, what do you have this time? And like, what did you do? And what was your inspiration for this market?
And I know, and
it's
then
so
the
much
door's
fun.
Still open, and I'm like running back to my booth because I don't have enough time. I'm like, oh no, the door's open.
But it's wonderful though to see that we're, you know, as a community, that we're able to help fill that need or want that people are looking for, and to be able to connect with other like-minded people in a place where predominantly we don't have a platform to stand on sometimes. And so it is really refreshing to have those things available to us.
Yes.
Yeah.
And since we're talking about witchcraft, what does magic mean to you?
Magic for me is the space between the things that we have words for, and it's just hopeful, and it's empowerment. Mm-hmm. And it's just so hard to describe, because it's a personal thing for all of us. We all have the things that we feel are magic, and we all have a little bit of magic inside us. We all have these inherent gifts and talents. And if you look at handmakers, if you look at what they come up with, that's magic. That one person can create something, and everyone is different. You know, something that's handmade is so expressly unique. And I think it's creativity is magic, making things is magic. Yeah.
I think that's why we like asking that question, though, because it is something different to every single person.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. I know I connect a lot with animals and birds and things, and I'm always talking to them all the time. Every time I see an animal, I'm like, oh, hi, you. What are you doing over there? And it's cool. Sometimes I can hear them, and sometimes, you know, I'm just like, what's up? I'm here. If you want to talk, you know?
Yeah.
But it is really cool to hear what it means to everybody, because we do always talk about how personal it is. Like, it's all about, you know, finding and discovering what you love and what you enjoy. And that is a very empowering feeling when you start to really, like, listen to your own intuition and self and go, this is where I'm meant to be. And it's hard. Sometimes it's really hard to go stand in your, you know, in your space and say, oh, I'm going to do this. So
yeah,
especially in today's world with the go, go, goes, or the expectations of, you know, having to have a normal 9-to-5, or, you know, those types of things that you still see, where we should be more empowering to each other and saying, oh, you love this so much, you want to do it, go for it. Like,
mm-hmm.
Stand in your power and say, I'm here.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm a bad influence on my friends, because I'm always like, quit your job. Go do what you want to do.
I told Ben the same thing. I'm like, you can do it. Just go for
like,
it.
Just quit your job. Yeah. Like, maybe that's not the best advice, but.
I don't know. I think for 2022, that's really Yeah. Like a lot of us are feeling that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and sometimes it's good, though, to tell people, like, to give them that empowerment and mm-hmm. encouragement, you know, and say, hey, like, go for it. Like, throw yourself into this thing. And because it is, it's so unknown and it's so scary. I talked about that in the magazine article in Canvas Rebel. And it was just like, it's such a different experience going from a steady paycheck to order. But then at the same time, when I get to get up in the morning and do yoga and I don't have to run somewhere at every hour of every day, it's that makes it worthwhile in its own self, you know? Yeah. So,
the exquisite yes. pleasure of being able to sleep as long as your body wants to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those days when you don't have to set an alarm, those are really special days.
Yes, they are.
Yes. Yeah. Or when you're like, I need to rest for like 3 days straight, so I'm going to do that, and you can. That's really important, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm really curious about your collection of vintage textiles. So when did you start collecting, and why were you drawn to the vintage textile art?
Oh. I love them. I was sent a box of family heirlooms from my maternal family back east about 15, 16 years ago. And my grandmother and great-grandmothers, they had, there was a loom in the family. They loomed their own fabrics. They did embroidery. They did painting on china. And they just randomly sent me this box because I've always been into vintage. Growing up, we didn't have a whole lot, so my mom either made my clothes or we went to thrift stores.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found vintage, and I was like, oh, this is amazing. You know, I want to dress like Jackie O in the ninth grade. and I did, like Jackie O, and then, of course, you know, you found, like, Maud and Punk and all that. But I got this box of linens, and when I opened it up, I just, like, I had feelings. You know, I had feelings. There was energy that came off of it. And it was this just visceral pleasure of picking them up and touching them and feeling the natural fibers and seeing the stitches and seeing, you know, how the teacups were painted. And it felt good. I was like, oh, you know, the serotonin, this is amazing. And so I really connected with them. And it started me collecting them, you know, going out to thrift stores. And 10 years ago at thrift stores, you could still find vintage linens.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately now at a lot of the big chain thrift stores, they don't even put them on the floor. They just go, I hate to think of where they go. It was just that feeling. And I'm a Taurus, and so I love beautiful things. I love sensual pleasures. And it just hit, you know, it hit all those marks for me. And so it came a little bit of a compulsion. I collected way more linens than I could actually craft with. When I pass, I'm probably going to leave, you know, a ton of vintage linens. But it was feeling that connection to my ancestors, you know, feeling and just feeling excited about them.
That's phenomenal. I feel the same way. Like, I actually, my favorite thing, every New Year's, one of my friends and I, we go out of town. And so one of my favorite places to go and thrift is Cottonwood. And so we normally spend one day driving around the town we're in, and we go to all, or walking if it's Bisbee, and we go to all the little thrift stores. And I actually ended up with a 100-year-old hand-woven lace bed coverlet that was made by a Quaker for $7 at a thrift store in Cottonwood. And it was like, same thing, though. I picked it up, and you could just... There's an air about it, and you're just like, oh my God, I'm like, I'm going to rescue you and take you home. I can't have it out because my cat will destroy it, but one day I will get to enjoy that beautiful coverlet. And it's amazing when you find something that you're really passionate about, but also that connection to your ancestors and rescuing things that people put a lot of time and energy and effort into. It's lost a lot nowadays, like, the amount of levels that it took and skill it took to survive. I mean, to take cotton off of a plant and then spin it into thread and make something out of it
mm-hmm.
is incredible. I wish I could figure out how to do that, but that's a lot of work, and it was a different time period. So it's nice to respect those things that people took so much love and energy into.
Yeah.
So I think that's incredible.
Yes, I think so too. How long have you been crafting for, and do you have a favorite project or favorite type of thing to work on?
Oh, I've been crafting since I was little. You know, I remember making outfits for my dolls and for my cats and, you know, making mud pies. And I'm very lucky that my mom is a crafter. You know, she comes from a long line of crafters. And then on my paternal side, my dad is a woodworker. You know, he has a shop where he carves and builds. Mm-hmm. So it was something that was always, there was room for it in my family. And, you know, I would have different supplies available to me as a kid. And so I just always loved it. And I started making my own clothes when I was in high school because I didn't agree with the fashion choices my mom was making with what she was sewing for me. And so it started with sewing my own clothes, and then, you know, like, I think everybody who's a maker and a crafter understands, like, the compulsion. There's just this, like, little part inside you that's, I want to make something. Mm-hmm. And it's making for the sake of making. It's not always about what the product you end up with. It's just, I want to create, you know, I want to play with paint, or I want to play with clay. Mm-hmm. And so that is like a little beast that I feed when I try new stuff all the time. But then that's frustrating because when you try something for the first time, you're not any good at it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But we enjoy that.
Yeah.
We enjoy not being good at it and being like, okay, that was crap, but it was fun.
Yeah.
Like, it was fun to work with air dry clay, or it was fun to try this kind of decal. And so so I appreciate that experimentation, but then I also appreciate, you know, doing things over and over again, like focusing on what I do well and doing it over and over and over again, because that's how you can achieve excellence.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Just like a musician, you gotta practice and practice and practice and yeah.
Yeah. I, like, with making candles, it's, like, now I'm at the point where I have it timed and I got it down, and now I know they'll all look exactly the same, and that's a rewarding feeling compared to when you first start and you're like, this is taking forever, and why is it, you know, why did that one look different than these batches, and, yeah. You know.
Yeah. And that is an achievement. That's hard to do.
Yeah. Takes a long time. So whenever people are like, well, I could just make a candle myself, I'm like, do it.
Yeah, go for it.
Try it.
That dreaded moment when you're at a market and someone comes up and goes, you could make that.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's like, God. Do it then.
Or I like when people don't take I don't know for an answer, and I'm like, I'm really sorry. I was like, I can point you in the right direction with resources, but yeah. I can't answer that question for you.
I usually say that's not my area.
Yeah,
like, that's
of expertise.
Not my expertise. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's scary.
Yeah, that yeah. one's a good one, yeah.
Because
yeah.
a lot of times people ask me about astrology, and I'm like, that's not my area. That's not something I'm super passionate about, so you should ask someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Know?
Well, and that's the best opportunity to then refer somebody in the local community. I do it all the mm-hmm. time. I carry her business cards, other people's business cards with me, and they're like, because I have little mystery tarot cards, and I'm like, oh, do you read tarot? I'm like, no, but she does. Here you go. Here's her card. Oh, do you have CBD products? No, but he does. Here's his card. You know, like, just yeah. that way then I can network in the local community and get people more involved in that as well, which is really cool to be able to highlight other people's areas of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
But I am really curious about your chickens, and how did you come to start being a mother hen?
Oh, I love my chickens. Well, my family had chickens when I was growing up, when I was really, really young. I was born in Tucson. So when I was in like kindergarten and first grade, we had a coop in the backyard, and I loved them. I loved going out and opening up the box and, you know, picking up the eggs. And my classes would take field trips
okay.
to see the chicken coop. And one time we had, my classmates were there, and I opened up the chicken coop, and there was a hen sitting in the box. And I was like, well, this is where the eggs come from. And like magic, the hen laid an egg, like with everyone watching. And I felt like a rock star, like that moment, I was like, behold. So I really loved that and had really fond memories of the chickens. And then about 10 years ago after I bought my house, I was really lucky to be able to get a house that was on a quarter acre lot. And, you know, you look at all this space and, you know, but there has to be chickens here.
Yeah.
Chickens need to be here. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I just started with 3 chickens, and now I have 10. And I've had them for about 10 years. And they're fabulous. It's wonderful to be connected to a food source.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And eggs are so versatile. And eggs are just, they're so rich in symbolism.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they contain everything for life. And this is kind of a like a side note, but how amazing is it that chickens have outsourced their womb? You know, chickens mm-hmm. can lay an egg. It's outside of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then if they go broody, if they choose, they'll sit on the eggs for 21 days, and then they hatch. And everything is inside that egg. But that hen can get up. She can walk away. And then she can come back to it. So I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, the concept of laying eggs is fantastic.
I'm sure a lot of human ladies would like to be able to do that.
Yes.
I mean.
Yes, to be able to just, like, lay an egg and walk away. Yeah.
Yeah. Or just be all cozy. Just take a little nap mm-hmm. for 21 days on top of it, you know?
Yeah.
Yes.
We love naps. That's so exciting to be able to keep them and have that connection. Like, I am fascinated by beekeepers. And that they have one of the longest spans of, like, life in commercial, like, in industries. And I thought that was very interesting and about how it dates back to the meditative states and that because of the way the hive interacts, it literally creates, like, sound sonic waves that help us relax when we watch and listen to them. And so it's, like, very enriching to watch and keep bees. And that's where, like, the keeper of the secrets are, is,
yeah.
like, kind of where that came from. And mm-hmm. I'm wondering if that comes from either some sort of, maybe, like, it was, like, a thing where they, like, met by the beehive and, like, talked business. Or if it was, you know, maybe just that they were noticing that the people that kept bees lived longer. And so it became more, like, you know, honored and time traditional
yeah.
piece. But like you said, it's another food source as well
yeah.
with the honey and things. So I thought that was really cool. I read that the other day.
That is. That's fascinating.
Yeah. I've never heard that before.
Yeah.
That's cool. So when you're not crafting, do you have a favorite hobby that you do?
Yes. I've got a million hobbies. I love to cook. I love to garden. The summer, I mean, it's really hard to garden in the summer. I miss all my plants. Basil is growing really well right now in my front and back gardens. And I love to read. I love reading about contemporary witchcraft. There's so many great practitioners out there that are publishing books left and right. So I love that. I love journaling. I love reading reading fiction, listening to podcasts. Sewing, trying new things, yeah. Just a few of my hobbies.
Do you have a favorite book to recommend?
Yeah, right now I'm reading a book by Juliette Diaz called The Altar. I know, she's amazing.
I was looking at the Plant Witchery book. I'm like, I have that book.
Oh.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Which one are you reading right now?
Yeah, it's called The Altar Within, and it is all about how to approach the idea of witchcraft and the idea of your practice with breaking down colonialism and understanding that there's so many things that come from mainstream culture that are harmful, and a way of looking at your practice and realizing that it is all of our responsibilities to be aware of the lack of diversity in the witchcraft scene. And to break down barriers and to give back and to have awareness that witchcraft is political, that we need to be aware, and especially as a white woman who's practicing in a spiritual space, realizing that identifying as a feminist and white feminists have always traditionally left behind women of color and people of color. And you have to own that, and you have to say to yourself, what can I do to change that or to change a tiny piece of that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Julia Diaz, read everything she does. Mm-hmm. She's amazing.
That sounds really interesting. I'll have to read that, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, her books are also incredible.
Yeah, like the other day we were talking about how you have to also educate yourself on different cultural practices so you're not just taking it in and making it yours.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, too, do you have a favorite vegetable that you like to grow or plant? Like, that when it is available. I know, because I accidentally killed my catnip the season. And it was so big and beautiful, and I left it out one day too long. And I was like, I'm sorry, little guy. But I want to try my hand at peppers. I hear they grow really well.
They do. Yeah. Peppers in Arizona are a good mix. Tomatoes and basil. Mm. It's just the perfect combination. Because if you have fresh basil and you have fresh tomatoes, I mean, oh, the world's your oyster.
That's like true.
A million things you can make with that.
Got my stomach grumbling. I'm like, we just need a little slice of buffalo mozzarella, some balsamic, we're good to go. Throughout your business endeavors, is there any advice you have to give to inspiring entrepreneurs?
Well, this is just from my personal experience, because I would never say that I was a stellar entrepreneur when it came to selling my handcrafts. It was more of like a compulsion. It was something that I just really felt the need to create. And then I kind of had to justify why I was making so much stuff and doing markets. So I didn't really have the best business sense when I started that. And witchcraft, it has really challenged me to take a step back and be like, whoa, this is happening. Like, you need to educate yourself on how to do this. But my advice would be to limit the amount of new products that you make, to kind of stick with one thing that you do well and keep doing it. Over and over again, you know, you can post one product on Instagram a million times. It's okay. Stick with what you know. Because I would try something new all the time. And so every time I did a market, it's like, how do I display this? You know, where does this go? Because it was all new fabulous things. Mm-hmm. But you know that your booth can look a little messy when you have, you know, 12 different things. So, like, I would tell my former self, like, calm your tits. Like, just make 3 or 4 things. You don't have to go crazy. And then the other thing is to relax on buying supplies for new products. Because we want to make stuff. We want to make new things. So maybe go, okay, I'll try this, but I'm not going to buy these supplies in bulk.
That's what we literally just talked about, like, about when we did our entrepreneur episode. I was like, don't buy too much. That was, like, the first lesson I really learned, was I bought way too much in bulk, and then I had jars for years that I never used because I was like, oh, I have this great idea, and then it didn't work, and I had all these jars.
Yeah.
I never use them, you know.
Same. I have a box sitting in my dad's storage unit right now that is like $100 worth of jars, and I'm like, okay, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with this now.
Well, maybe we could do like a swap where more established crafters could bring like the graveyard of
I love that. Yes.
And then new crafters could be like, oh, you know, I want that.
I love that idea. That clears out some space for new stuff for us.
That's a really great idea. Yeah.
Because we know when you buy in bulk, it's cheaper. So there's that temptation there. And then the other advice I would give to entrepreneurs is to look at the perspective of seeing other people as competition, because they're not. There's no competition. You know, handmakers, what you do is unique. What we do is expressly ours, and no one can take that away. Because it's made by you, it's made by me. And so I see some discourses of, like, for example, you know, somebody who makes candles being, oh, well, you know, looking at another candle maker as competition or somebody who's gonna steal ideas. And we have to roll back the way we think, to kind of acknowledge that there's not really a whole lot new out there. Pretty much anything we're doing is derivative on some level. It's how we do it. It's how we put it together mm-hmm. that makes it special. So don't see other people as competition, and don't get all, you know, like, into posting or shit-talking because you think someone's taking your idea. When you meet other makers, look at them as a resource.
I was just going to say, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where did you get that? Mm-hmm. You know, where do you use for supplies? What do you do? How do you sell your candles when it's 110 degrees mm-hmm. outside? You know, we're all resources for each other, and we can build each other up mm-hmm. and strengthen each other. And if you have that attitude that you think people are taking from you, it's not going to be as productive as seeing people's resources.
And it's going to be pretty lonely. Like, the good thing about feeling like it's a community and supporting each other is then you all support each other and you have almost like a huge group of friends who are willing to help you out. Whereas if you're seeing everyone as competition, it's like, then you're by yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and it creates a vibe that is just, it's a lower energy vibe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I think we've seen that a lot with different markets. You can tell which ones are very supportive and which ones aren't, and the mm-hmm. ones that aren't, you don't want to be at because it's a whole different energy compared to the ones where everyone's supporting each other and you want to be there and it feels good, and you know you're all there for the same reason. It's not like someone's like just there so they can be better than someone else. You're all there to just make money and promote your business. I think it's a waste of time to have a vendetta or to try to, like, be better than one specific business, you know?
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, and I always look forward to it because it's so much fun. It's like being around a family reunion that you only get to see every few months or even every weekend. There's a gentleman in Chandler. I love him and his wife. And he calls it funky art, and he paints on slices of wood and does jewelry boxes, and his wife sells earrings. And, like, and they're just always so happy to see me, and it's so nice to be like, what's up everybody, how's your week been? And you know, it's a really cool to see when you find a community that's very supportive and behind you, and to talk to people. And it's nice too that you don't feel so alone, because sometimes in business, especially if no one else around you has started a business before, it's hard sometimes talking to them about these things that you're worried about, because it's hard for them to put themselves in your shoes because they haven't been there and then gone through that.
Yeah, I mean, the witchcrafted community is just so cool to see how rapidly it's grown. You know, we had to change venues 3 times to end up at the Glendale Civic Center, which is big. I mean, it's a big venue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just amazing to see vendors, how they've grown. I mean, just like you guys, for example, you know, to see vendors that started with doing pop-ups that have now moved into brick and mortars, to see some brick and mortar shops go to witchcraft and go, hey, we want to vend, we want to do a pop-up there, which is really exciting. And, you know, like we talked about, I think before we started recording, about the spider web, and the spiders are something, a correspondence that I feel really connected to for the Hallows Eve market, because I see witchcrafted as like this spider web, this web that's growing and connecting everyone. And I love seeing vendors meet each other and then doing collaborations. You know, doing collaborations that will come to my shop and do tarot readings, or I'm doing, you know, a workshop. And I love being able to share. Like, you know, because you guys know I don't really like creating content. I love everyone else's content. I want to share that. And I love those days where I go on and I'm like, ooh, they're doing a workshop. Ooh, they're doing this. Yeah. You know, this is happening, and I love it. I love to see how everyone is just expanding and growing and, yeah, getting to know each other and forming these new relationships. And it just gives me life. I'm really proud to see that going on.
Fantastic. It's so amazing.
Yes, I think it's a really unique thing
mm-hmm.
and a really unique community that's just going to keep growing.
Well, and like I met some, like, I mean, I look up to Courtney from Crimson Sage, and I remember the first time I met her, I was like, oh, I feel like a little kid, you know, the first time you see somebody and you're like, oh my God, you're so amazing. And like, it's so cool. And like now, like we're close and like we exchange resources and we talk and like, you know, and I was, I won an Instagram contest for Witches Magazine and I won the Kitchen Witchery book from Sarah Robertson, which is a fantastic book. And, then they were like, we love your Instagram. You want to advertise in our magazine? And I was like, oh my God. I was like, cause my dream has always been to go global. And I'm like, I'm going to be in a global publication. Like, this is insane. And I had known that Courtney had advertised and I was like, hey, what do you think about this? Did you feel like it was worthwhile? Did you enjoy, you know, working with the magazine? And she was like, oh my gosh, it was so great. And so it was nice to be able to have that resource and go, hey, did you enjoy this? And now my advertisement just dropped this 2 weeks ago in their summer edition. And then I'm also advertising in the autumn edition of Witches Magazine as well. But it was really cool because I found out about them from Courtney. And so it was just like this whole little timeline of little perfect things that lined up all together in one little package. And it was just like so neat to see happen.
And the people that come out to Witchcraft they're really cool.
Yeah.
And they are, there's no like one kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you go to makers markets and the attendees all kind of look alike.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one, you know, but at Witchcrafted, I've always been so amazed by the diversity in the crowd,
mm-hmm.
and ages, and people that you wouldn't expect to be into Witchcrafted are there with like 3 or 4 bags full of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Super excited. For me, like we had one, we had one customer at the Ostara Market. He was an older man, probably in his like 60s. And I thought, okay, well, he just brought somebody, right? Like somebody dragged him there. No, he was there by himself and he was having the time of his life, you know, and seeing, we've had teenagers that have come to the market and met other people in their age mm-hmm. group. I've had some people in their, you know, 40s tell me, I really wish there was a market like this when I was younger.
I also think it's so, like, I've had people tell me that too, but it's like, I've had a dad with his daughter, and the dad was like, I think it's so cool because I would have loved to find something like this when I was younger, and now I can bring her. And it's like the generational thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people, my friend worked the last one with me, and remember the kid got lost?
Yes.
And she's like, you can totally tell the kinds of people who are here because the second they announced, like, there's a lost kid, the room went deathly silent. And then he, like, ran down the middle, and everyone started clapping. And I was like, it's just, like, everyone was just waiting. And I'm like, yeah, because everyone cared,
yeah.
You know?
Oh, I just got, like, little shivers when you said that. Yeah, I remember that. And Cujo, who does our door, is an amazing creature. We are so, we're just so lucky to have him. And, yeah, as soon as the parent came and said that, you know, he grabbed the mic, and that was a really special moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just remember it was like you could hear a pin drop. Everyone was so quiet. And then everything resumed again. But I was like, that's amazing that everyone was so quiet, especially for that market.
Yeah, because that's a huge market. I mean, mm-hmm. there are probably, you know, 700 people inside that room.
It's an incredible experience all around, and we're definitely looking forward to October. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. It's 2 days before my birthday, so, you know, I'm going to be breaking out that birthday sash again because I love it so much. Did you have any other questions?
I think that's it.
Well, we always like to end with what was something magical that happened to you this week?
These two amazing women came to visit me, and I got to have a really nice conversation with them.
That's so nice.
Thank you.
Everyone's been so nice.
Yeah, we're so excited. I mean, we met for lunch and Tess was like, do you want to do a podcast? And I had never even really listened to a podcast. And then I was like, yeah, let's do it. And we started talking about names and everything. And then that night I went home and ordered everything. And I called her the next day. I'm like, so when are we doing this? And I'm like, I got everything. It's on its way. And she's like, well, I guess we're doing this.
And I thought she was just like, yeah, let's do it. And then I would never talk about it again because that's what happens with everyone I would ever bring it up to. And then she's like, I ordered the mic. And I was like, oh, okay. I was like, okay, you're serious. This is good. And then in, like, 3 weeks, we got everything done and ready.
Yeah, and you guys are rolling with it. I mean, are you doing an episode every week?
Yes, every Tuesday.
Dang. Yeah. I mean, that's a lot. When you think about it, and, like, I can't even conceive of how to edit. And that's then...
We've been just overjoyed being able to interview you and have you on the podcast. So thank you so much for joining us this week.
Yes.
Oh, you are welcome. I was nervous. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to put myself out there like that. But I'm glad I did.
Yes, we're glad you did too. This was a lot of fun. And we can't wait to see what the response is.
Well, thanks guys for joining us. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.